Okay, folks, we're all set to get ourselves underway here now in lesson number 2 in the series entitled Biblical Earth Science and Astronomy. I'll have you take your Bibles here now and prepare to resume where we left off last time. If you remember, at the end of our last lesson, I told you that there were still a few more verses that I wanted us to look at in which some building terminology and household furnishing and household structure, building structure terminology is utilized by God in talking about the earth and the heavens and creation as a whole and so forth. And being familiar with the blueprint concept that we saw last time in Proverbs chapter 8, and an appreciation for the wisdom and understanding of God functioning as an architect and drawing up wise plans once again in connection with creation and creation being put together and created and made in accordance with those plans and the various forming and making and so forth that God went through on the 6 days of creation, all being in accordance with those architectural plans and so forth. In accordance with all that, there's an appreciation we can have, therefore, for the building terminology that's used in various passages that talk about the earth and the heavens as structural pieces of a grandiose building issue. And the more you understand and appreciate that, the more you realize that the language of accommodation concept, figure of speech concept, oftentimes applied to those type things, it goes beyond that, far beyond that. There's reality to those statements, and God expects us to look at creation as a masterful building that He has created with structure and everything to it, and places and chambers and rooms and so forth to it all, and that it's all designed literally to be a holy temple unto Himself. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself there a bit, but we'll get to all that stuff as we proceed on in the study here. But as I said at the outset of lesson number 1, there's a need for some preliminary understanding in our minds. There's a need for some frame of reference to be established in advance for concepts and passages and verses we're going to be looking at. And that's what we're doing right now. And it'd be easy to just kind of give you some verses to look at and just say, familiarize yourself with these, but I'd rather take the time to make sure we do that, and to make sure this terminology is recognized by us. We appreciate the consistency of it all with the architectural wisdom of God in having drawn up plans that He delighted in on a daily basis as He created and made, as Genesis 1 and 2 describes, in the 6 days of creation. And last time we ended up with simply noting some passages that talked about the windows of heaven, the windows on high, and the doors of heaven, and a particular door, for example, in Revelation chapter 4 that John goes through that gives him entrance into the very throne room of God in a very particular building that exists in the third heaven there. And as I indicated to you last time, right now we're just simply citing these verses. We'll be looking at them, hopefully all of them, in more detail as we go on through this course of study. So kind of rein yourself in, I guess, if you're not able, if you want to deal with them now, we're not dealing with them now. We'll be getting to them as we go down through the passages and make progress in our study here. But take your Bibles here now, if you would, and turn with me to Job chapter 38, along with the 104th Psalm that I've made reference to already when we were there. Job chapter 38 is going to be a passage that we'll be spending a good deal of time in. But right now, we're simply going to note terminology here. While you're turning to Job chapter 38, I'll take our sheet off the board here that describes the lesson number. We aren't actually utilizing the board very much in these opening couple of lessons. There's really no need for it. But as I've indicated to you, once we get this terminology down, the next thing we want to do is to begin to put together a basic structure of the unit, and not put it together ourselves, I don't mean it that way, but to take the verses and realize what God says, therefore, and to begin to try and illustrate this. And we'll be doing that, hopefully, in the latter half of this lesson right now. But Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38. And let's take the first seven verses here of Job chapter 38. It says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? And I'd be fascinated to talk about the situation that surrounds this, and maybe we should do that when we come back to the passage and look at some things in more detail here. But right now, let's just read it on down and look at God's going to ask Job some questions, and they're going to start off with the issue of his creation of the earth. But when he talks about the creation of the earth, he's going to talk about it just as we would expect him to talk about it in view of what we've seen in Proverbs chapter 8 and Psalm 104 and other places. He's going to talk about the fact that I built something, Job, and I built the earth. The earth has been built by me. And I built something as a residence. That's really what it comes down to. Job chapter 38. Once again, verse 2, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. We've already seen a passage in Psalm 104. It talks about the foundations of the earth. We saw it again over in Isaiah 24 there in reference to the Lord's day of wrath yet to come after this dispensation of Gentile grace is concluded and God resumes and begins to fulfill his program with Israel on this earth. The Lord's going to have his day of wrath. Windows from on high are going to open again. Some other stuff along with water is going to come out of them again. Much as what took place at the time of the flood, but with some more things coming out that didn't come out at the time of the flood. But it also talked about the effect of all that on the earth. And it talks about the foundations of the earth shaking. It talks about the earth being moved like a cottage. And it talks about reeling to and forth. And the other passage talks about being moved out of its place and everything. Well, this foundations of the earth. And we talk about an earthquake and everything. And we see buildings in an earthquake quaking and moving and being moved off their foundations and crumbling down and so forth and being clean destroyed. And that kind of stuff will be going on, of course, in the Lord's day of wrath also as the earth itself is quaking and the structures of the earth that men have created and put up and everything come tumbling down. But the earth itself is going to quake as one big object. And it's going to reel to and fro like a drunkard, as Isaiah says there. And that's because its foundations are going to shake. And the way in which that's done, by the way, is fascinating, I should say. There's things that God calls the ordinances of heaven and their influence on the earth. And the way in which the ordinances of heaven and the powers of heaven hold the earth and keep its placement in this type of thing. I don't want to get into these things right now. As exciting, as fascinating as they are, as far as what we're doing, we're just not ready for it yet. And how much we will get into it when we do touch upon them remains to be seen in everything. But I'm simply saying some things that are hopefully going to be able to give you an appreciation for the fact, as I've been saying all the time here, we're not just dealing with language of accommodation. We're not just dealing with terminology that doesn't have reality behind it. We're dealing with terminology that accurately describes what's there, what God did, what he created, what he set in place. And he says the earth's got foundations. Where was I when I laid the foundation there? Declare if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? And the measures there, man, he's got a... Well, let's go on. And who has stretched the line upon it? Remember in the last lesson in Proverbs 8 there, we saw the verse there where God set the compass upon the face of the deep. Got the measurement once again on his blueprint there. He sets the compass and everything. He sets the bounds and so forth for the sea and all that kind of stuff. Well, we got some similar descriptive verses about that right here. And you got the issue of the measures being laid thereof. the size of the foundation, the perfect size to keep it where it's supposed to be. And you get who stretched the line upon it. Notice it says, it doesn't ask Job, was there a line stretched upon it? As if maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. He asked Job, who did it? In other words, there was a line stretched upon it. Now, Job didn't do it. He wasn't there. Someone did it. God himself did it. But he's got a line. There's a measuring line that he used. He's got his blueprint. Once again, he knows the size. He takes the measuring line out, and he laid the measuring line out, and he stretched it forth. And when it came to the end of the line, he said, that's it. That's as far as that's got to go. Hey, we see that on a much smaller scale with builders today. They take their blueprints and everything, they take their measuring lines, they go out there and they measure the dimensions that the building is supposed to be. And they lay it out there. God did the very same thing with the earth when he's creating it. Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Well, now he's just talking about the foundation themselves. Their size, their dimension, their capacity, and all this kind of stuff. Now he says, Job, whereupon are they fastened? And the issue isn't, are they fastened, or aren't they? The issue isn't, is there a place they can be fastened to, or isn't there? The issue is, where are they fastened? They are fastened, Job, but do you know where they are? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof? Oh man, that's a classic building term. The cornerstone. Look, the stone upon which all the other measurements, once again, are taken. The one that's laid the firmest, and not that the others aren't laid with as much care and concern attached to it and everything, but that cornerstone is the one from which all measurements are going to be taken and everything. It's the benchmark stone, so to speak. It's that critical one. Who laid that, Job? Not the issue isn't, was one laid? One was laid. The issue is, who laid it? Well, God laid it, of course. But right now, what we're looking at is the issue of one was laid. And God couldn't use any better building terminology and building contractor terminology and architectural terminology and all that would make you think he's building a big building. He couldn't use any better terminology than he is using. And man, if he doesn't want you to think about the earth and the heavens as one gigantic building, then he's used some terminology that's completely wrong with that. Because if you just let the terminology do the talking, that's the understanding you're going to get out of this. But I happen to think that's exactly what God wants you to think. That's exactly what he wants you to understand. He wants you to understand he's built a gigantic building. Doors, windows, foundations, pillars, as we'll see in a minute, stories, as we'll see in a few minutes. He's built a gigantic building. Interesting enough, God asked Job these questions. Where were you? Who has done this and everything? There were some creatures there who saw God do this. Now, they aren't the ones who did it, but they saw God do it. They're part of the angelic realm. Verse 7 says, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. By the way, that's fascinating. Not that we need that this present time, but we will eventually deal with that issue. But in view of the fact that we saw in the last lesson in Proverbs chapter 8 that wisdom that's resident in that blueprint that was set up and that was drawn up by God before his works of old and everything, in view of the fact that was God's daily delight, and he rejoiced in it, and it rejoiced back with him in what he was doing, there were some creatures of the angelic realm there that were observing it also. And they sang together. Man, there was joy on their parts and everything. They weren't just looking at what God was doing there and ho-humming about it and saying, well, I can't wait till this is over so I can go do something else. No, they sang together. Man, they responded to what they saw God doing. By the way, they understood what he was doing. They understood he was building something. You ever stand in awe at a craftsman when you see his handicraft and everything just coming together before your eyes, and you almost wonder, and how's he doing that? And you're amazed at the delicate manipulation of his fingers and the tools that he's using and everything to make something of exquisite craftsmanship and beauty and so forth. Well, you do that especially if you're all thumbs and someone like me who, if I keep on moving my fingers around too much, they'll get tangled all up in a knot. You really have an appreciation. You just stand in awe at it. And usually you come up with some words of praise for what the person has done, describing how wonderful that is. Well, that's a small-scale example of what was going on there. The morning star, the sons of God, they weren't baffled by what God was doing. They understood what he was doing. We'll see some of that a little later on, and that blueprint that God was looking at, they could see that thing too. And they could see this thing that he was coming together, and they could see the immensity and the magnificence and the majesty of this whole thing that he's building, this glorious structure. The morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Man, when you shout about something, you shout because the emotional response to what you see and everything, your normal conversational type voice is inadequate for the expression of it. And joy here, it says, was the emotional response to what they saw him do. And not just, it's not just their response to the creative power of God. And I'm not saying that that's not part of it, but I'm saying it's not just that. They saw the issue of the design, function, form, plan, purpose of what he's doing. And they reckon that, and they perceive that wisdom that's there. They saw the genius of what he's doing. And they shouted for joy. Now the goal and purpose once again of this series of studies is that, you know, a measure of that ought to be ours. God's communicated in his word information that describes what he was doing, that gives you an understanding of the blueprint, lets you look at the blueprint. And man, we ought to sing together about it, shout for joy over it ourselves, have an appreciation for the knowledge he says about the earth and the heavens, biblical earth science and astronomy. While you're still here in Job, I'm going to have you come over to Amos. We'll get to Amos in just a moment here. But while you're still here in Job, let's do some things for convenience sake here also. Come back to chapter 9. Job chapter 9. And also get chapter 26 in your hand. Job chapter 9 and Job 26. Job 9, Job 26. Job chapter 9 here, verse 6. Well, let's just start in verse 1. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered, which removeth the mountains, and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble, which commandeth the sun, and it riseth not, and sealeth up the stars, which alone spreadeth out the heavens, and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, who doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. Now Job's saying some things here that he understands, that come from his understanding and appreciation for the very fundamental things about God and his power and his greatness and his majesty as the creator of the earth and the heavens. And he understood the building terminology. When God asked him those questions that we saw a few moments ago in Job 38, God did not expect Job to stand there dumbfounded and say, Lord, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? The foundations of the earth. What are you talking about? Laying the line and the measures thereof. What are you talking about? Foundations being fastened. It's not that God was saying some things to Job that Job had no frame of reference for. God was saying some things to Job. In fact, just about everything that God says to Job in all that series of questions in chapter 38, 39, 40, and 41 there and everything. God's reasoning behind that is different than most people, I think about. And that's because most people don't really have an appreciation for the book of Job. If you're not going to rightly divide the word of truth, you're going to have trouble with the book of Job to begin with. But if you're not going to let the book of Job stand in its doctrinal position there and acknowledge its doctrinal position, where it is, and so forth, you're going to have some other trouble with the book of Job. And oftentimes, the purpose of the book of Job escapes people. It's not just good and evil and all that kind of stuff. It's far beyond that. But what God had Job go through and everything, and then God's dealings with Job and the counsel God gave him. Job needed counsel is what he needed. But the counsel wasn't coming, the proper counsel wasn't coming from his three supposed friends, and not even Eliphaz. Elihu was giving him the counsel that he needed. Counsel was being darkened by words without knowledge. Job needed to hear some words with some knowledge to them. Now, it's not that the other guys didn't say anything that had any knowledge to it whatsoever, but they didn't have the knowledge that dealt with the realm of knowledge Job needed to hear. And when God asked Job those questions and everything, and he deals with the issue of the earth and its design and purpose and so forth, and deals with the issue of things in the earth that are going to be utilized in the day of his wrath, it's looking at the earth for the design and purpose God has for it, and the things that are yet to come on the earth when the Lord has his day of wrath and then sets the earth as his plan and purpose called. That's the realm of knowledge Job needed to be dealing with. And Job knew some things about the earth, but Job wasn't getting the counsel he needed by thinking of those things. And God gives Job the counsel he needs so that his counsel isn't darkened but lightened by the things that God says to him. Anyway, the reason why I'm saying all that is to underscore the fact that Job had some knowledge about the heavens and the structure and everything. He understood the building concept that there was there. And he expresses that in what he says about things in the earth and the heaven before the Job 38 incident ever took place. And here's an example of it, Job chapter 9. In verse 6 he says, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble. First of all, Job knew the earth had a place. And Job knows of a time already that had occurred when the earth shook out of her place. And Job also knew that this whole thing was one big building, and there were pillars thereof that trembled. pillars supporting vertical upright structures that hold a multi-leveled structure together. By the way, while we're here, notice in verse 8 that who alone spreadeth out the heavens. We saw that concept, stretch out the heavens like a curtain there in Psalm 104 and everything. You got the stretching and the spreading concept. Well, we'll deal with those in connection with the basic structure of creation. And but you're gonna need to have both those, the stretching and the spreading out issue. Verse 9, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, star constellation. By the way, God made them. He made, when he put the stars, numbered them and everything, he not only numbered them so he knows the number thereof, he numbered them so that certain ones are in proximity to one another, and on the earth they produced constellation that could be named. And that a basic mapping of the heavens could take place with. Which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, rooms. Chambers in the heavens. You're familiar, like I indicated to you in the last lesson, in our epistles, Paul's epistles. Paul talks about the heavenly places. Plural, heavenly places. When we get to the biblical astronomy section and everything, we're going to need to recognize the basic structure of the heavens and that there are places there and that there's governmental authorities that have authority in those various places. There's chambers of the south. Come over to, in connection with this, come over to Psalm 19. You're probably familiar with what David talks about in connection with the sun. And it talks about the heavens. Well, let's just read it here. Psalm 19, verse 1. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. But the handiwork, that's interesting. That's terminology that's used in connection with a carpenter. Handiwork. The creativity and the exact placement of objects and so forth and pieces of material in accordance with an overall structure that beautifies it, adorns it, produces designed functionality in it. Day unto day uttereth speech, night unto night showeth knowledge. There is not just knowledge of the fact that God exists. That's the most fundamental knowledge of all. But knowledge of the fact that God built something. And that you're living in his building. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them, when you talk about the heavens once again, hath he set a tabernacle for the sun. A tabernacle for the sun. In them is set a tabernacle. There's a particular place the sun lives. Which as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of heaven and his circuit unto the ends of it. And there's nothing hid from the heat thereof. It's just another example of some terminology once again that looks at the heavens. I mean, see, there's a tabernacle out there for the sun. Chambers of the south. And so forth. You got Job 26 there also in your hand. You should. Job chapter 26. You got the pillars of the earth there. Job 9. Job 26 here, verse 11. Job talking again. This is a fascinating passage here and everything. And once again, the understanding Job has, it's a fascinating thing. I have a tendency to want to talk about Job here. There's so much misunderstanding of the book of Job. Job had the information he needed to be properly counseled by. But his circumstances, and especially the disinformation from his supposed friends, were darkening the counsel that he needed. God comes along and asks him a bunch of questions and everything that bring things up into Job's thinking. And it's not that God didn't supply further information for Job. He did on a great number of things. But he's also calling upon a frame of reference Job had. And Job needs to operate upon that. And the doctrinal significance of that in God's program with Israel is fascinating. But here's another example in Job 26 of some of the knowledge that Job had. Verse 7, for example, he says, "He stretcheth out the north over the empty place, and hangeth the earth upon nothing." Don't get the idea that Job had some understanding similar to some heathen idolatry that had the earth on the back of a turtle, for example, swimming around a cosmic sea type thing. Job understood the earth hung on nothing. But Job also understood that there were some ordinances of heaven, that though they were not visible to him, they held the earth in its place and functioned as foundations upon which it was settled. He bindeth up the waters in his thick clouds, and the cloud is not rent under them. He holdeth back the face of his throne, and spreadeth his cloud upon it. That's an interesting one. He holdeth it back. We'll see the curtain concept that is the primary means by which that is done. He hath compassed the waters with bounds until the day and night come to an end. The pillars of heaven tremble and are astonished at his reproof. He divideth the sea with his power, and by his understanding he smiteth through the proud. By his spirit he hath garnished the heavens. Well, I was referring to a few moments ago back there in Psalm 19 there. I talked about the issue of the handiwork and everything that ends up adorning and beautifying and manifesting the functionality of the heavens. When you garnish something, there's adornment and beautification to all that. I mean, cooks use those words and chefs use that word all the time. When they garnish a table with the dishes of the food that they prepare and everything, usually very ornately done to make it appealing to the eyes as well as to the palate, as they say. Garnishing. He's garnished the heavens. By his spirit he's garnished the heavens. And he set those things up with what his spirit wanted to see for beautification. His hand hath formed a crooked serpent. Now, there's an individual that came into this situation. I'm getting beyond what we can deal with right now by any means. But that's a fascinating thing there. And then that crooked serpent comes up again, Leviathan. The Lord brings up to Job's attention. Job understood something about this, but he wasn't making the connection. Job says, "Lo, these are parts of his ways. But how little a portion is heard of him, but the thunder is power, who can understand?" Job said, these are parts of his ways. Didn't we come across that expression over there in Proverbs 8? Wisdom was set up before his way, before his works of old. His way. This is his way of doing something. what he's doing is in accordance with the way he wants things. When Job says these are parts of his ways, these are parts of the things he's done that are part of the overall master plan of what he's doing and set up by wisdom to do. My point here in the passage, though, is the pillars of heaven. We just had the pillars of the earth. Now we get the pillars of heaven. Pillars, once again, those vertical, upright structures that hold the levels of a multi-level building together and provide for multiplicity of levels. You'd almost get the idea that you've got this gigantic building constructed here, and that you've got levels or stories to it. Come to Amos chapter 9. Amos chapter 9. Hosea, Joel, Amos. Chapter 9. How are we doing here for time? Amos chapter 9. Verse 6. This is a fascinating verse here, but even more fascinating in its context. We'll read the verse here, and I'll determine in the course of reading the verse whether we'll examine the context now and say something about it. But verse 6, it is he, an identification of the Lord God of hosts. It is he that buildeth his stories in the heaven, and hath founded his troop in the earth. He that calleth for the waters of the sea and poureth them out upon the face of the earth, the Lord is his name. That's a dismal time in Israel's history here. They violate that law contract. Their abomination and degradation and devolution into the same situation of the nations around them, the heathenism around them, has brought them to the beginning of the fifth course of punishment. And that fifth course of punishment is coming upon the nation. It comes first upon the northern kingdom with the Assyrian captivity, then upon the southern kingdom with the Babylonian captivity here. And the Lord himself personally and physically leaves the land of Israel in connection with this. Absolutely devastating issue. When Ezekiel saw it, the first 11 chapters there of Ezekiel, Ezekiel's there when the final nail, so to speak, is put into the coffin, and the God of Israel leaves, and he sees it, and it's a devastating thing. But the worthiness of it and everything, these fifth course of punishment prophets like Hosea, Amos here, Joel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel there, and so forth, they set forth the worthiness of it coming upon the nation. They set forth the issue back there in Leviticus 26 of this fifth course of punishment, the first four having been gone through, Israel not changing her mind or anything like that. She brought it upon herself and all this business. They indict her for it all. And you see all the details of that. But then God does some things once again that manifest it. And Ezekiel, for example, is a prime example of seeing the very departure of the God of Israel from Israel. Not only from his temple, but from the city of Jerusalem, and then he goes to the borders of the land and he takes off. And is thrown with the cherubim and the wheels and everything, and just take him away, and he leaves. Amos is one who saw something in connection with that also. Verse 1, I saw the Lord standing upon the altar, and he said, smite the lintel of the door, that the posts may shake, and cut them in the head all of them, and I will slay the last of them with a sword. He that fleeth of them shall not flee away, and he that escapeth of them shall not be delivered. Though they dig into hell, thence shall my hand take them. Though they climb up to heaven, thence will I bring them down. And though they hide themselves in the top of Carmel, I will search and take them out thence. And though they be hid from my sight in the bottom of the sea, thence will I command the serpent, and he shall bite them. And though they go into captivity before their enemies, thence will I command the sword that shall slay them. I will set mine eyes upon them for evil and not for good. And the Lord God of hosts is he that toucheth the land shall melt, and all that dwell therein shall mourn, shall rise up wholly like a flood, and shall be drowned by the flood of Egypt. It is he that buildeth his stories in the heaven, and founded his troop in the earth. He that calleth for the waters of the earth, of the sea, and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. The Lord is his name. It's verse 6 once again that we're after here. But there's a reason why God says what he does there in verse 6 in view of what he's been saying from verse 1. Israel was to understand that they, in their land, with God's house set up in the midst of their land, that all that was really a mini picture of what the whole thing was all about. And when he comes along and he's standing upon the altar there in the midst of the house, he says, smite lintel the door, that the posts thereof may shake, the pillars thereof of the house may shake. His judgment of his limited size representative house on the earth at the beginning of the fifth course of punishment was a mini picture of the judgment in the day of his wrath upon the totality of his house of creation. And he will stand upon the altar thereof. John sees in the book of the Revelation, chapter 9, in the book of the Revelation there, in connection with the altar of the third heaven there. And he stands up. And he smites the posts thereof of creation. And the pillars of the heavens tremble. And the pillars of the earth do shake. And the entire house structure that he has built gets judged. It's the reason why he talks like he does in verse 6, in view of what he's been saying in those first 5 verses. But verse 6, he buildeth his stories in the heaven. Stories. That's not stories like books. And those kind of stories, he buildeth his. This is the issue of a building with stories to it. It's kind of like the earth's the ground floor of a massive building. Well, this passage will be one we'll look at a little later on, when it comes especially to the biblical astronomy section of things. Pardon my peering over to the clock there again, but let's see, a couple more places, and then we'll begin to take this frame of reference concept now that we are developing and begin to put some things together and understanding-wise. Back to Job 38 one more time. Job 38. Well, yeah, as you head back to Job 38, continue on for a little bit and also get all the way back to 1 Samuel chapter 2. Job 38, 1 Samuel chapter 2. Let's take 1 Samuel 2 first. All I want here, once again, is the pillars of the earth type issue. 1 Samuel chapter 2, Hannah and her prayer of rejoicing. Verse 8. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust, lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill, to set them among princes, and to make them inherit the throne of glory. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he hath set the world upon them. Oh, foolish Hannah, just figure the speech and language of accommodation and all this kind of business. Hannah understood some things. Hannah here's a pretty good rebuke to old Eli. She understood some things. And she understood some of the building terminology. She understood not only what the plan and purpose of God with Israel is, She understood the plan and purpose of God with the earth. She understood the plan and purpose of God with creation as a whole. She makes the reference to the pillars of the earth once again. She says, they are the Lord's. She understood that there was someone else who had kind of claimed them for himself. And that individual had even come into the very piece of land that God had claimed for himself. And that individual, he even had his own men running the very tabernacle of God in Shiloh. Eli's sons, it says later on, were children of Belial, Satan's own men. Hannah understood these things. She understood the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he has set the world upon them. And she understood some things about the Lord's day of wrath that was coming too. In fact, her understanding and appreciation of things, like I said, put to shame the ones who should have known in Israel. But anyway, that's not the issue right now, although it's always tempting with me to talk about things like that. The issue is, once again, the pillars of the earth. And appreciate for that building terminology again. Well, Job 38, like I said, one more time there. Job chapter 38. We were here a few minutes ago, but I want you to look at something else that comes out of this passage that fits in with the building type terminology. Come all the way down here, if you would, to verses 22 and verse 23. Job 38, verse 22 and verse 23 is one of the issues that the Lord brings up to Job that Job would need to understand when it comes to the issue of the judgment of God that's going to take place when he repossesses the earth. He says to Job, "Hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow, or hast thou seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against the time of trouble, against the day of battle and war?" The time of trouble, the day of battle and war is coming. It comes on the Lord's day of wrath. Because I've reserved some weapons, some armaments to use in that day. And have you, Job, entered into where they are? He talks about the treasures of the snow and the treasures of the hail. Now, most people, when they deal with this passage, or most times when commentators make comments upon this verse here, they miss the boat completely. Most of the time you hear people talking about the treasures of the elements that are in snow and hail and things like that. And they talk about the amount of this element, that element, so forth, you know, comes out of the atmosphere and it gets collected in the snow, collected in the hail, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying that stuff's not true. But what I'm saying is that's not what the Lord's talking about here, at least not my understanding. These issues that he calls the treasures of the snow and the treasures of the hail, that Job could enter into it, that's a place. You enter into something, you go into it, it's a place. The treasures is like the treasuries of them, a place where these things are kept. And the storehouses, so to speak, like where they're kept. And God asks Job, have you entered into them? Have you even seen them? He says, I've reserved them against a time of trouble, against a day of battle and war. And these things are stored up as weapons. The snow and the hail is. God's used snow and hail on occasions already in judgment. At the flood. And Joshua had an experience with them. Israel already had some experience with them. And not only in Joshua's day, but in Moses' day also. The judgment of the hail, once again, that was part of one of the plagues on Egypt. He's going to use these things again the day of his wrath, just like he said. He didn't empty out those storehouses. He's reserved some. My point right now, though, isn't that, as fascinating as that is. My point right now is that there's places where that is stored. Job couldn't enter into them. There's places where God has stored those things, though. And that's consistent also with a building that this creation is. Buildings have rooms, chambers to them, as we've seen that terminology used. Well, there's treasuries, treasure houses, storehouses also in connection with it. Well, There are other verses we could look at. I think right now what we've done is we've looked at a sufficient number of verses to underscore the fact that the frame of reference that we looked at back in lesson one, based upon that blueprint terminology of Proverbs 8 there in particular, that's all valid and real and necessary to understand. And God expects us to look at what He's done with creation as the issue of building a massive building. And there are windows and doors and curtains and chambers and rooms and storehouses and places. And we'll even see things similar to hallways and ways as tabernacles, as we've seen, and all this kind of stuff. Foundations and pillars, stories, it's all descriptive of the building that the heavens and the earth are. Now, we have 8, 9, almost 10 minutes left to this study. We want to begin to describe it further, put it together, and begin to get a mind's eye understanding of it all. I told you that in order to do that, we'd be primarily dealing with two major passages, Job 38 being one of them, but we're not going to begin there. Come over once again to Psalm 104. Psalm 104. I have a tendency for some reason to always turn in the wrong direction. I don't know why I do that. I have a feeling it's because I'm thinking of more than one passage in advance, and the one I state is the one that comes out of my mouth, but the one that I'm actually thinking of where I'm going next is not that one. Anyway, Psalm 104. All right, we quickly read a little while ago the first five verses here anyway. What I'm after right now especially is the second and the third verse. But let's take verse 1 and down through verse 3. Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and majesty, who coverest thyself with light as with a garment, who stretchest out the heavens like a curtain, who layeth the beams of his chambers in the waters, who maketh the clouds his chariot, who walketh upon the wings of the wind. All right, we got the issue there, especially in verse 2 and the first part of verse 3. The psalmist says, God covereth himself with light as with a garment. And then he says, who stretched out the heavens like a curtain. And then says, who laid the beams of his chambers in the waters. Now, folks, what we got here is actually a description of what God did, in the essentials of what he did in connection with what Genesis 1:1 and verse 2 says. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. What you've got here in what David is saying in connection with God's greatness, and the fact he's clothed with honor and majesty for the godness of his being, and the most essential issue of his godness is his creatorship. David comes along here, And he says some things that put a further descriptive understanding and appreciation upon those first two verses of Genesis 1 that says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, darkness upon the face of the deep, the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. But in connection with doing that, he clothed himself with light as with a garment. And then when he created the heavens and the earth, he stretched out the heavens like a curtain. When he created them and they came into existence, they're stretched out like a curtain. Now you got to think about this. not being able to think about anything that you're reading, but you need to think about the significance of that, what that's saying, what that's describing, and everything, and in connection with what's said back there in those first two verses of Genesis chapter 1. Now we're just introducing this now; it'll become the big issue in the next lesson. But right now, I'm introducing it to you and asking you also in preparation for the next lesson to give some thoughtful consideration to this and those first two verses. I haven't had to turn to Genesis 1. I've just been quoting the verses to you for time's sake here. But God's clothed himself with light as with a garment, stretched out the heavens like a curtain. And what's a curtain do? It blocks out light, is what it does. That's what you get curtains on your windows for. If the curtains weren't there, people on the outside would be able to see what's going on in the room you are in there through your window. And you're able to see on the outside through your window. And especially when you turn a light on in your room and everything, and it makes exactly what you're doing all that much more visible. But you draw the curtain, and now those on the other side of the curtain can't see what's going on with you. But not only that, the light that's in the room where you are doesn't go beyond the curtain. And now that light's cut off, and it's dark on the other side of that curtain. And that's exactly what's described there in the first two verses of Genesis. In the beginning, God creates the heaven and the earth. And the earth without form and void, and darkness is on the face of the deep. The earth becomes the focal point now. He's created the heavens and the earth, but the focal point's now upon the earth there. And darkness, it's enveloped in darkness. Well, why? He's clothed himself with light as a garment. Why isn't that light coming through? Why isn't the whole thing he's doing bathed in light? Because he's stretched out the heavens like a curtain. It's blocking the light from coming through. How are we doing? Okay. I'm gonna start illustrating this. I got to turn this way to unspin myself from the cord here. We need to rectify that pretty soon, I think. I'm going to start illustrating this, and I'm going to start just like this. And I'm going to let this ellipse up here represent God. And in view of the creative activity, he's clothed himself with light as with a garment. I mean, this light is emanating from him. He clothes it with light as a garment. It's just emanating from him and everything. He creates the heavens and the earth. And we'll put the earth down here for now, like that. He creates the heavens and the earth. But the heavens, as he creates them, he stretches them forth like a curtain. And therefore, they're going to form now a barrier, a curtain-like barrier between himself on that side of the curtain, clothed in light, and what he's just created. And on this side of the curtain is the earth, and it's enveloped in darkness. It's all dark in here. Now, I can't illustrate that by using black, otherwise the whole thing just... the marker doesn't work, of course, for that. You're gonna have to understand. That's what I'm saying. That's the illustration that I'm drawing here. And as we now begin to look at some particular knowledge in biblical earth science and astronomy, first thing God we're gonna set down here. The first thing is the heavens are a curtain. Well, I'm not talking about what the substance and all this kind of business. And I'm not talking about what the stars are made of that are placed in the heavens and all this. I'm talking about the fact that firmament of the heavens functions like a curtain. And it keeps the light of God's heaven, where he himself dwells, from penetrating through. And it also prevents you and I here on the earth from looking up there and seeing beyond it. Now that's pretty simple. But folks, that's really profound too. There's real knowledge that comes out of that. And we'll touch upon some of those things as we progress on here. Now, we've just begun. This is a real simplistic beginning, but it's just the beginning. In preparation for our next lesson, like I said, give some thoughtful consideration to the terminology and the wording here in Psalm 104 in the opening verses and back there in the opening verse of Genesis. And then we'll pick it up there and begin to add some further details. We need to see some further things and gain some further biblical earth science knowledge and heavenly astronomical knowledge. Until next time.